Welcome back. Here with Dave and Andrew, we've got special guests with us today, Philip Peterson, Chief Investment Strategist at Manulife Investments. And before the break, Philip, we were talking a little bit about, you know, 2018, kind of how it shaped up, how scary it was in the last quarter. 2019, the summary here is that it looks pretty good. Like, asset classes have definitely repriced, looks pretty decent. I want to know, though, what you're worried about. Like, there's lots of headline risk. The question is it real? Is it news or is it noise? And I want to get a sense from you of, you know, if you're looking around the world at what risks you feel are real and what we need to keep an eye on.
Okay. I think if you look at the headlines, a couple of ones that are jumping out right now, Brexit. I don't necessarily think Brexit is a real risk. I mean, it's a disruption. It's a little bit more uncomfortable. But as far as the markets are concerned, I don't think it's something that is going to have a lasting impact. Companies have been aware of the Brexit risks over the last 2 years. They've been preparing for it. And I think if it does ultimately become a hard Brexit, then they flip the switch. They know exactly what plan B is.
Right.
So we can. That's going to be driving headlines. And I think that will drive sentiment. But let's kind of put that away. The real one is not necessarily trade with China, but the Chinese economy on its own.
Okay.
And I've been following the Chinese economy for the better part of, you know, a decade and a half, maybe even longer than that. And I've always been very comfortable with it. It's a centrally planned economy that tends to benefit when you don't have an opposition, right? That's the good and the bad about it. But it was something, we've seen the Chinese economic data weaken.
Right.
Right, slowly over the course of the last year, not to the point that we would be overly concerned, but some of the messages out of President Xi, for example, a couple of weeks ago in a speech to the party, he addressed the importance of being aware of the social consequences of a slower economic environment.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to point this out means that the government is aware that things are slowing. They're aware of what it might mean. And this time, they need to make sure that they can, well, they've managed it well, but they need to continue to manage it very, very well.
Bit of a tightrope at this time, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Now, they've been transitioning from being an export-driven economy to a consumption-driven economy. Well, and that's the problem, right? If now you're relying on the consumers, your population, to drive your growth, well, your population better be happy, fed, employed, and so on. So this is something that, it's not one that I said is a high probability risk, but it's the one that it's so difficult to try and really nail down what exactly is going on from an economic environment from China because of the data and the questions around the validity of the data that we get.
Right.
So it's one that you say, yeah, I hope we got this right. I think we have this right, but let's keep paying attention to it as much as we can, because if it's wrong, this is the number two economy in the world. It will have far-reaching consequences to the global economy.
And there's a secular trend here that's been going on for a very, very long time, which is this transition in their type of economy. Like, they want their economy to look more like a developed world economy, right? And is it at 6 to 6.5%? Can they sustain that? Or should we continue to expect to see it just naturally slow as this, you know, just massive manufacturing infrastructure build is sort of abated, and now they're moving more to a domestic demand, a consumer-driven economy?
Yeah, well, there's another factor to consider as well, and that's population growth. And we know population growth in China is slowing down. So we don't necessarily need to keep growing at 6-7% on an annual basis just because you don't have the population growth that's required. Or that's going to demand that.
Yeah.
And so I think we will see China naturally slow down. But what they want to do is they want to manage what's called a soft landing.
Yep.
Right. As opposed to just a hard landing where you get a reset on the economy. So I think this is going to be the trend. And it's what the government does to manage that trend. Now, what have they been doing over the last couple of months? They've been cutting taxes for 75% of the population, right? So that's quite meaningful to get the consumption economy going.
You bet.
They have been cutting interest rates. They've been cutting the required reserve ratios at the banks to allow banks to lend more capital. They've been encouraging loans to small businesses. So they've been putting in place the stimulus to stimulate the economy. And I think we'll see that.
Yep.
I think we'll see that. But it's the, you know, well, if something could go wrong, what could go wrong?
Yep.
This is it. I'm not concerned about the U.S. I'm not concerned about what's going on in Europe. This is the one that we continue to watch.
Okay. And that'll surprise people, too. So let's deal head on with this U.S.-China relationship, trade relationship. Okay. I think you and I are probably on the same page that the high probability outcome is they resolve it, because it's not good for anybody if they don't. But there is a probability that we get a policy mistake somehow, given the different factors at play and the different personalities at play. So let's take the worst case scenario. Let's assume that we get to this place where they can't resolve it. We've got tariffs applied on all U.S. and Chinese traded goods, somewhere in the order of 25%, perhaps higher for autos. What does this look? What does this world look like?
Well, ultimately, if we did end up in that worst case scenario, which I don't think is going to happen, I put less than a 30% probability that we would see that, because I believe the administration in the United States wants a deal. Any deal.
Right.
Doesn't matter what it's going to look like. It's going to be sold to us as the best deal ever. They want a deal. And the Chinese want to get this headwind moved aside.
Right.
However, if it went that far, and if we did see tariffs on the upwards of $500 billion in goods that comes in from China into the United States, the consumer is what is who pays for that.
Right.
And this is what I think is largely misunderstood. It's not the Chinese that pay for that.
Right.
The Chinese pay for it in terms of perhaps falling exports.
Yep.
The U.S. pays for it in terms of increased tariffs.
And inflation.
And the consumer is the one that pays for it. So ultimately, I think what this would do is it would trigger a recession.
Right.
And that would be kind of the worst case scenario. Now, from a market perspective, given where valuation is today, I would expect earnings would drop 10 to 15%, valuation drop 10 to 15%. This would be more of like a garden variety correction, a garden variety bear market. It would not be a repeat of 08 where we were down 65%. 2000 through 2003, down 65%. I think unlikely to look like that. But no one wants that.
Right.
No one
But it could be, in fairness. You know, equities could fall 25 to 35% somewhere in there if this worst case scenario plays out. Again, when we use the garden variety people, they think something different than what it can be. They forget. I think there's a complacency with investors that was developed over 16 and 17 about risk, right? We forget that equities, in just regular terms, can swing by very, very wide margins, right? Okay, so we give that a pretty low probability. Maybe let's just summarize this, because we've talked about some scary stuff here. In the last segment, we talked a little bit about what the base case is. Summarize it, and then I want to talk a little bit about positioning for people that are, moving into retirement, how they should be thinking about their portfolio.
Certainly, the base case is a much better year in 2019 than 2018, even with the rally that we've seen already in the month of January. That we still think that there's room for this market to go because, again, let's rule out the risk of recession. We don't see signs of recession anywhere. Let's look at valuation. Valuation is very, very attractive, much more so than it's been in the last couple of years. Earnings growth, while probably not going to be as strong as we saw last year, is still going to be positive.
Yep.
And so those three things tell us that, yes, we still have a positive outlook for equities in most areas around the world going forward over the next 12 months. And bonds, where interest rates aren't going to move up as much as they have over the last 2 years. In fact, if at all, bonds are in a much better position. So a balanced portfolio, in our view, looks much more attractive this year than what we saw. Positioning-wise, given the fact that we still see decent upside, modestly better upside in equities than fixed income, we're slightly askew equities. So in a balanced portfolio, where a benchmark would be 60% equity, 40% fixed income, we're 65-35. And we continue to favor international. We like the U.S., but the best upside from a valuation and earnings perspective is really in international and in Canada.
Right.
Now, this is a real change for our view, but Canadian equities, largely driven by the financial sector and energy sector, look attractive.
Hmm.
Very attractive there.
Quick comment on the energy sector. You're in Calgary here.
Yep.
What makes it attractive?
So what we're seeing is you got the curtailment of production in Alberta. That's positive for prices. You got OPEC that's going to be cutting. That's positive for prices. And the lack of investment in the United States is likely to result in flattening production growth. In fact, if we might even see some declines in production before the end of the year. So tighter supply through 2019, which should help boost prices higher at a time when energy stocks themselves are trading at 15-year lows.
Do we capture any of that? Do we get that in Alberta and Canada here?
I believe we do. I think the global response to oil prices is a reflation of valuations not only in U.S. oil. In fact, we would say Canadian energy is even more attractive than U.S. energy right now, and that's going to be recognized by foreigners.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's good news. I want to thank you for joining us, Philip. It's always a pleasure when we get you, and especially when we're in studio together. I enjoy that a lot.
I'm very happy to be here.
Okay, I want to remind you before we sign off on this segment that we've got our next seminar coming up. The next seminar is on February the 19th, but both of those sessions are now completely booked. We do have our March 26th session at the Crowfoot Co-op Wine, Spirits, and Beer. The 7 o'clock session is full, but the 8:30 is still open for registration, but we're running out of seats quickly. Please give us a call at 966-8400 to reserve your seat, or you can go to morethanmoneyradio.com, and you can do it there. Okay, stick around after the break. We'll try to make sense of all this. You're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.